We would essentially, I mean, one of the best ways that I know to do that is to buy something that's already either fully or close to fully tenanted. Let's say, I don't know, 4 out of the 6 units have got long-term tenants in them. And then we would quietly start experimenting with vacant units, or if it's fully tenanted, we'll wait for one tenant to move out and then experiment with that unit. And if that
Yes.
goes well, we'll slowly expand. Basically, once the long-term tenants see that the place is turning into a short-term stay property, a good half of them, if not more, will probably not renew their leases when they expire.
Yes.
So that'll eventually clear out the rest of the building for short-term rentals as well.
Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima, again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over 2 decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right. Huge thanks to everyone who attended last weekend's 7th session of the Japan Real Estate Summit at the Pullman Hotel in Tokyo and online. We had a blast as always, and from the initial feedback that we got from you all, it seems that you did as well. We're now working hard on the summit's downloads page. We'll have all of these recorded presentations, the slide decks, the photo gallery and highlights video reel all ready for you in a couple of weeks at most, so watch this space. We've already locked in the dates for the autumn summit because a lot of you who are coming in from overseas have specifically asked for more notice. So mark your calendars. The autumn session of the Japan Real Estate Summit will take place on the weekend of 17th and 18th October. That's Saturday and Sunday, as always, in Tokyo and online again. The in-person venue will be announced as soon as it's locked in. And based on your feedback forms, which we're now collecting, it will probably be at the Pullman Hotel. Everyone who had a ticket should have received a survey link. So filling it in will also put you in the raffle for free tickets to one of the next events. So do fill these in. All of our organizers, the speakers, the sponsors, Blanca Kobayashi from Arc Reform, Tracy Northcott from Tokyo Family Stays, Emil Gorgis from realestate.jp, myself, of course, Matt Ketchum from Akia's, Alicia Kin Wang from Axolotl Capital, Shumatsu Post and Brett Lee from Akia Hub, Mark Drabkin from Yen Loans, John Cross from Mailmate, Chai Kanda and the team from Shiki Properties, Ben Tanaka from Retire Japan, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com, and Charles from Tatemono IQ. We are all very, very grateful for your support. Many of you have already attended many sessions of the summit by now, but there were so many new faces in the crowd, both property enthusiasts, industry professionals, and it was a real pleasure, as always, to see you all listening, chiming in, asking questions, and getting answers, of course, but most importantly, meeting, chatting, and networking with each other. So we really love this incredible community that's being built and added to every time we hold this event. And yeah, again, very grateful for your support and happy that we can provide this value to you, both informational, but also, and more importantly, a place for you to meet and gather and meet like-minded folks like yourselves. So simply, yeah, thank you for another great event. All right, so for today's episode, 2 back-to-back conversations with first-time property buyers in Japan. This first one is an investor based in Canada, and he's targeting multi-unit building investments. He's open to any of Japan's major cities and going to be purchasing with a combination of both cash and a loan that he'll be getting back home in Canada. And we discussed the strategy of purchasing a tenanted property, then switching over from long-term leases to short-term stays and or monthly leases over time. And so we talk licensing, practical management options for this purpose, whether he should target a building that's a mix of residential and commercial units, and whether he's able to, at the budget that he's got lined up, consider smaller cities. And if so, what are the pros and cons of those? We also talk about how we might be able to leverage such an investment for residency purposes, legal and accounting considerations, maintenance, repairs, renovations, and what sort of yields can he expect to gain from such an investment. We talk about when he should get started, what are the next steps, how the purchase process works, all the way from initial listings research through due diligence, submitting an offer, signing a contract, and finally settlement. So real nice deep dive into the multi-unit universe in all of its various shapes and forms. Enjoy this first conversation, and we'll be right back with another one after this.
So I briefly browsed through your email. I was running a bit late, so I haven't read all of it, but I saw that you're looking at a budget of about 250,000 Canadian, and you were talking about a multi-unit
yes.
building, mixed.
Yes.
Okay, but 250,000 Canadian, what's that in Japanese yen at the moment? That's 28 million yen. You don't buy a building in a good location and good quality for that.
Okay, so like how much do you need then?
They start at around, if we're lucky, 40 million yen. I'd say normally around 50 million yen for good ones. Sometimes we get lucky with something a bit cheaper than that, but I would normally assume about 50 million yen. So that in Canadian at the moment is... why is it not showing? Oh, can I get the mill in there? Don't mill me. About 445,000 Canadian. Let's call it 450 with a bit of purchase costs.
Yeah, well, that should be okay because me and my wife, we do have enough equity.
Yep.
Yeah, so I can always pull it out, right?
What sort of percentage are you getting for that equity, though, in interest terms wise?
I would have to go back to the bank, maybe 5 to 6%.
5 to 6%. Well, I mean, you're only getting, if we're lucky, 5 and a bit % before tax for that sort of investment here. So that's almost negative geared, right?
But that's like only on after 250,000, right?
So okay. So you get cash. Yeah. Got it. So you get 250,000.
Yeah, so we have cash 250,000, and then next year we'll have another maybe 70 grand.
That's still a little bit under. You need another 100 or so.
Yes.
On top of that. So 100,000 with loan means you'll be paying about a quarter. Okay, so from the total cost of the building, only two or three, only like a quarter would be financed. So I'm guessing what, about 2%? Okay, that's doable then. I get it. Okay.
Yeah. And that's based on the cap rate being, I think most of your videos I saw, the late cap rate is about 5 or maybe 6%.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's just based, I think when you do that net cap rate, that's based on it being long-term renters, right?
Correct, yes. So if you want to experiment with short-term stay and whatnot.
Yes.
Okay. So that we've got a few customers who do that. So we would essentially, I mean, one of the best ways that I know to do that is to buy something that's already either fully or close to fully tenanted. Let's say, I don't know, 4 out of the 6 units have got long-term tenants in them. And then we would quietly start experimenting with vacant units, or if it's fully tenanted, we'll wait for one tenant to move out and then experiment with that unit. And if that goes well, we'll slowly expand. Basically, once the long-term tenants see that the place is turning into a short-term stay property, a good half of them, if not more, will probably not renew their leases when they expire.
Yes.
So that'll eventually clear out the rest of the building for short-term rentals as well.
Yeah, so from that, so since we got 250,000 cash, so we would have to pull out equity for another 250,000, right?
Yes, if we're lucky, a bit
Yes,
less than
which is
that, but
okay. Yeah.
yeah.
So my question is, when I watched your YouTube videos, so when it's the net cap rate, so that's net cap rate, not counting your taxes and maintenance fee, right?
Maintenance, vacancy expenses. So whenever a property becomes vacant, that's when you'll renovate, repair, and you'll have a couple of months of vacancy. And if it's a good
Yes.
location in Fukuoka City, probably not longer than 2 months of vacancy or so. And
So
then you'll be
if you have
paying
a
for repopulating it. So there's a bit of an expense that you want to factor in for the vacancy, the repopulation, and the repair and the spruce that comes with it.
So if you have a mixed-use building that has retail tenants on the main floor and then, tenants on top, so does the retail tenants pay some of your costs for the like, whatever maintenance fee, or is he
No,
like a lease
so
agreement?
there's two aspects there. First of all, at this budget, I don't know that you'll be able to get too many mixed purpose. Those are usually for $1 million or two when you're buying a bigger concrete building. For the budget that you're talking about, it's going to be a small, they're called in Japan aparto, and they're basically residential units. There's not many of them with shops or offices on the ground floor. You could potentially rent out to somebody who's using it commercially, like a lawyer or an accountant or somebody who likes to have a residential unit and use it as an office, but they're not different to residential tenants. It just gives you access to a few more types of tenants. That's all.
So for that 500,000 CAD budget, is there's nothing in Japan that I can get like in a retail on the bottom?
Not in a good location, no.
Okay. Oh, that's too bad.
Because
So
then
then
you're
how much?
looking to do that, you're looking at the concrete building, which can be 30 years or older. I wouldn't go as young as a wooden one, so it can be a little bit older, but it's bigger, so it's going to be a lot more expensive if it's in anywhere similar to those locations where we'd recommend it. I'd probably, for a decent shaped concrete building that might have a shop at the bottom, I'd probably allocate more like $1 million, $1.5 million Canadian as a starting point.
Okay, yeah, that's
If
it's
we're lucky,
doable for
maybe
them
we'll
not.
find something for 800, 900 that's borderline age and location wise. I don't know if Fukuoka, but maybe Nagoya or very suburban Osaka kind of thing. Maybe slightly suburban Yokohama, but not in central or suburban Fukuoka, I don't think.
Yeah, because I talked to my wife, we're not too worried if it's in like central area, as long as it's in one of those mini zones.
But
Yeah,
you
so
want
it
it
doesn't have to be the main area.
but you want it in a big city. She was talking about Fukuoka and you were talking about similar cities, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it'll be very suburban if it'll be less than 1 million, and I don't know that we'll find a huge amount of those.
So then, if we go outside the main cities, then is it still a good investment or?
It's not gonna retain its capital as well as something in the top five, six cities. But there are places like Kumamoto, maybe Saitama City, maybe again suburban, a little bit less central Yokohama, Chiba City. They would have good cash flow, but as to whether they'll perform well capital-wise or hold their value would really depend on a more macroeconomic thing. If we buy in Osaka, Fukuoka, probably to some extent Nagoya and Kyoto, then we know that we will probably at least hold our value and potentially gain. In those other cities, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, because our main two points of why we want to invest in Japan is A, to get our business management or the visa, and two is to is the cap rate to me is important.
Well, for the visa these days, you're within the capital range, but you'll also need to employ a full-time Japanese staffer to meet the business manager visa requirements.
Yes, that part I'm not too worried about because I just want to buy as soon as I can, and then maybe 2, 3 years down
Down
the
the
road.
track, look at it. Okay, I get it.
Yes, yeah.
So once you've expanded the portfolio and it's worth hiring somebody, then you'll consider that.
Yes, I either hire somebody or I can either buy a pre-existing business there or just like you know, start one out, you know, out myself.
That's an option too, yeah. And if your
Yeah.
company's been running for 2, 3 years, you could potentially be able to hire yourself as a CEO. That's also another visa option.
Yeah, because my wife and myself background here is we've been like self-employed the last maybe 25 years.
Okay.
Yeah, so I've done like restaurants, like hair salons, you know, out of laundromats, corner stores.
Oh, nice. So that's
Yeah.
definitely an option for you. Okay, got it.
Yeah. So for me to set up something there or buy something in Japan shouldn't be too hard though, right?
Okay, so we don't need to tie
Yeah.
it into the property purchase. We're just buying for investment at the moment.
Buying for investment where the investment is going to help with the business management visa, you know, in the end.
Yep, got it. Okay. That's all clear. Okay, so
So
that's
I've talked to my,
doable with the caveat that you'll need to finance a little bit of it.
sorry, yeah, yes.
Okay,
So
so
in
how
terms
can we
of,
assist? Do you want to get started? Do you know when you want to pull the trigger? Do you know when you're going to
yeah,
have the financing available?
so my first question is, if we only buy a building that doesn't have the mixed use, so there's no like, you know, retail on the main floor, can we actually use that building to help with their business management visa, or does it have to be mixed use?
It doesn't, the mixed use, as far as I'm aware, we'll talk to an immigration lawyer when it's time to apply for the visa, but as far as I'm aware, whether it's retail or commercial or not, doesn't have much to do with it. If the company is managing property assets or managing properties, meaning you'll eventually, let's say you have two buildings and you hire a cleaner, for example, then you're already within the
Oh, the
business manager
guidelines.
visa. Yeah. So it doesn't
Okay.
really have to be a commercial or residential
Mixed use
property.
then,
You
okay.
need to be managing a property portfolio.
Okay, so if for the budget that I have now, if a mixed use is out of the budget amount, so then I think it's best just to go for residential to only then.
And we can
Yeah.
definitely apply when we advertise for tenants. We can definitely apply to people who want to use it as an office. That might get us a commercial tenant.
Okay, makes
Yeah.
sense. Yeah. And I have one more question. So my whole point of buying in Japan as soon as I can. So like after we buy there, every single year I plan to go back to Japan at least once a year. Yeah, so do you have a good like, you know, network of like handymen and stuff, of like tradesmen, lawyers and stuff, or accountants?
Accountants and lawyers and property lawyers and real estate agents and management companies, yes.
Yeah, good. How about like a handyman?
Handyman in the sense that you can direct them directly as a foreigner visiting Japan, not that many, depending on which city. If you're in Tokyo, I've got a handful, but in other cities, you'll need to work with a more traditional Japanese repairs and renovation
Company?
company, and
Okay.
they'll want to communicate with a Japanese face.
Okay.
But if you're managing the
Okay.
property through a foreigner-friendly property manager or somebody like us, then we'll be able to
Yes.
manage the contractors for you.
Yeah, it's just the way I manage my properties now is we hire a property management company now, but then most of the repairs outside of the you know, well, whatever spaces I do myself, right? Yeah, so
You can
my goal
try, but
point, yeah.
I don't know that I'll have that many professional contractors or companies to hook you up with that'll be able to work with you directly in English. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Yeah, then that part's like, oh, you know, it's okay then, okay. Okay, so So I think the first thing to move forward now is if we don't go for a mixed use and it's just like whatever whatever just like whatever residential only, what should our budget be then for only residential only?
That's what we discussed. They started around
Okay,
40, 50 million in.
so around 400, 400 to 500,000 then,
Yes, that's
CAC.
correct. Yeah, and then you wanted
Okay.
to put maybe worst case 10% purchase cost on top of that. So call it 450 starting point.
And then how much roughly would the net like cap rate be? About 5 to 6%?
Net pre-tax, if we get to 6, I'll be very happy. In most cases, it'll be somewhere between 5 to 6 is the ones we'll be aiming for. That will enable us to get a younger and a little bit better located property, which will help retain your capital value. But if it's older and less central, then maybe it'll get to 6, 6 in a bit. But I like to stay central for the tenant base as well, if possible. So up to you. It'll be a bit of a balance to strike. We'll look at different listings and you tell me what you think.
And then can you find us a place that allows Airbnb the entire year? Or is that hard? Is that hard or?
We'll aim for properties that satisfy, if it's a Fukuoka city, then the Fukuoka city requirements. We'll work hand in hand with a short-term stay management company that knows the area. And they
Okay.
will guide us on what buildings will number one be feasible for easy licensing and number two be potentially profitable and attractive to guests.
Okay, because when I checked online, they said it depends on what part of your Japan you're from, but some areas only allow Airbnb for like only like 6 months, right?
If you want to get beyond the 6 months, you need to apply for a hotel or ryokan license, which could be feasible with some of the properties we'll be looking at if they have space for an automated check-in counter in the lobby, for example, in the staircase. So we'll need to aim for properties that would potentially be able to get a hotel license, and then you can rent out throughout the year. But every municipality is different in their specific bylaws. So if we're aiming for Fukuoka, we're aiming for a particular city within Tokyo, we're aiming for Osaka, those will be different companies that will be managing them and
Okay.
different municipal compliance.
So then it would be better to find a place that gives the choice of the entire year then.
Yes, so we'll be aiming for,
Yeah.
if you want that, we'll be aiming for places that are feasible and could potentially get the hotel license. And that's something that we'll need to work with a short-term stay management company from the get-go, and they'll help us screen the listings that will fit that.
Okay, that sounds good then. Okay. So then I'll let my wife know we'll need at least 500,000 CAD, right?
Yeah, if we're lucky, maybe it'll be closer to 400, 400, 450, but 500 would be a good benchmark. Yeah.
Okay, that sounds good. Okay, then we're gonna go away for about a week, so I think a lot of our long-term accounts is gonna come up in March.
Okay.
So I'll have to go to the bank to pull out equity.
Yep.
Yeah, so I think I'll have the funds ready by about April.
Okay, when that's the case, at the beginning of April, we can start looking at listings. And if we have something that we really like, you can pay the contract signing 10% deposit before the end of April, right?
Okay, what's that mean, the contract signing, 10% deposit?
Contract signing is when the deal becomes officially legally binding. That's where you pay a 10% deposit, which is not going to be refundable if you back out. So that's only after we've done due
Okay.
diligence on the property, we figure out it can get the license, we know that it's young enough or has renovation history, suitable enough, and we're happy to proceed.
So that 10% is when you find a place, you mean?
Yes, that's after. So we would start looking at a short list of properties and working with the short-term stay management companies around the beginning of April. And hopefully
Okay.
within about 2 or 3 weeks, we'll have a short list of properties that we could potentially submit an offer on.
Okay, and then once I like one, then I'll have to put down the 10% then.
We submit
That's
the
what I meant.
offer. If the seller accepts the offer or renegotiates, whatever the case may be,
Okay.
then once they agree to go ahead, their agent will draw the contract draft, We'll review
Gotcha.
those. We'll make sure there are no surprises in there. And if we're happy, then we'll sign it and pay the 10% deposit. And then about a month
That's
or
okay.
so after that, month or so after that is when settlement will take place.
Okay, so April, then maybe June. It's okay.
Yeah.
Sounds
If you want
good.
to start earlier, we can start in March and then be ready for settlement by the end of April. Up to you.
Yeah, we're just gonna go away for about a week for a
Yep.
trip. So we'll come back the March like 8th or 9th or something, 10th.
Okay. Well, we're here.
Yeah.
Let us know when you want to get started.
Okay, so when I come back, I'll go to the bank sometime next week. So when I come back after that, okay, yeah. So I think pretty much about the first, second week of March.
Sounds good. Let's be in touch then.
Okay. Okay, that sounds good. Okay.
Great. Thanks for
Okay,
your
thank
time.
you.
Great talking to you.
Okay.
Talk to you soon.
Okay,
Bye-bye.
thank you. All right, bye-bye.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So, really, the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens, and they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which, if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know they're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So, if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home, with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today. See how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now, back to the podcast. All right, so this second call is with a couple, and they're looking for a hybrid holiday home in Hokkaido, meaning a holiday home that they may also be able to rent out for short-term stays when not in use. So how should they look at it, firstly? Is it an investment in the normal sense of the word? Where should they be buying? How feasible would short-term rentals be in these various locations? Can they let friends and family use the property? When does it make sense to purchase as individuals as opposed to under a corporation? What would yields look like? What could affect these yields and how? How much are the purchase costs? How do taxes work? We also talk about how to work with short-term stay property managers and how we can help them to find these companies, how we can assist them with licensing and/or managing of a holiday home remotely, and how much that might cost, where and how to find these properties and how to conduct due diligence on them. What can they even buy with their budget, which is pretty limited, only about $50,000. And in case they do decide on a long-term lease rental property investment instead, how would that work? Can they take back ownership of the property at any time? And much, much more. So another deep dive, this time into the hybrid holiday home slash short-term rental property model. Enjoy this one too, and I'll see you one last time on the other side.
So to give you kind of background who we are and just the start of everything. So we visited Japan, what was it, in January for the first time? It was in January. We spent about 2 weeks there. We flew to Tokyo and then went up north to go basically skiing in Niseko and just really like the area. We were big skiers. We ski all around the US here, primarily in Utah, pretty Colorado, California. and decided we're going to go to Japan the first time, just ski wise, and try it out. So we flew up there. We spent about 2 weeks. Really liked the area, and said, okay, seeing the market in Japan, what would it look like consideration if we could buy a piece of property up there, both for just investment, potential rental income, and then also long term if we're going to use it in the future and just have basically a second vacation home there. So
Right.
the personal reason is he buys rental properties primarily in Texas and Florida. We live in Florida, but him and his brother have a basic development slash rental company that you buy and develop on houses and properties. So familiar with how we do it in the US, but obviously in Japan, it's a different country. We live in the US here, so it's obviously a lot different than it is just buying and purchasing property here in the US.
Right. So, and are you locked in specifically on Niseko, or is it any ski area in
Oh, it
Japan,
can
or?
be anywhere really. That's just the one area that we personally visited and just, familiar with. We didn't, I unfortunately didn't have a lot of time to explore the entire country, so I'm not dead set on that area. And there's a lot of factors that go into it. If it's more rental income based, if it's Airbnb, a lot of what's the market, if you get a return, or if it's just personal use, you might have an idea better of the lay of the land than we do.
Okay. Well, I'm asking because Niseko specifically, I'm told by some local agents that it could be getting a little bit better if you search really hard. But generally speaking, it's considered to be a kind of bubbly area. Properties there are more than a bit overpriced normally. Yeah. Just because it is a very, I mean, for good reason, it is an internationally acclaimed ski resort, and there are, multiple international real estate companies active there, like Australians, Americans. They're all there and selling very aggressively. So the area does, I mean, the image, my image at the moment, and I'm happy to be proven wrong, but at the moment we don't have any clients purchasing there because it does seem to be a little bit overpriced. There are more traditional Japanese-ish. Some of them are getting a bit international ski resorts that are a bit more popular price-wise in Nagano, a few in Niigata, on the main island on Honshu, not up in Hokkaido. The other thing is that if you're planning to be renting it out, so Niseko is overpriced, but is a lot more friendly to short-term stays. Whereas the local municipality in other areas tends to be a bit more strict. So the closer you are to the slopes, and definitely if you're within resort grounds, meaning there's an owner union and you're being serviced by the resort communal water systems and so forth, cleaning, gardening, and those areas would a lot of the time not allow any short-term rentals. So if you buy a house that's, let's say, I don't know, 30, 40 minutes drive from the slopes, that could be a different story. But if you're looking for the ski in, ski out experience, we'll have to look pretty hard to find something that you would be able to rent out. Again, unless we're targeting Niseko specifically, which is a bit more friendly towards that. Yeah. And summer-wise, I mean, some of these areas would have a bit of traffic in the summer, but generally speaking, you'd have to work hard on the marketing to get people to go out there out of season.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
And
I
also, generally speaking, I mean, owning any kind of short-term property, you might be familiar with that in your corner of the world, is basically running a business. Even if there's somebody managing it for you, you have to have your finger on the pulse, look at occupancy rates, vacancy rates, marketing campaigns, what's the competition doing, how much should I price it for? So it's not nearly passive, not even semi-passive, I would say. Yeah. So, with all that in mind, did you want me to go into your questions there?
I just questions on how the market works. I mean, I read, saw the videos, looked online how it works, but
Okay. So, first question that I see there is, can a property be purchased separately by a U.S. corporation? So, yes, that's possible, but corporate upkeep in Japan, not corporate upkeep in the Japanese sense that you have a Japanese entity, but accounting and bookkeeping and minimum corporate tax, if the properties are owned by a foreign entity, would be at a minimum about $2,000 to $3,000 a year. So, I mean, it's feasible, but it's a question of whether you're making enough income to justify that, and if the tax benefits are attractive enough. I'm not sure in your specific situation. You'd have to consult with your US accountant for that. But depending on how much you'd be saving, it might not be worth it.
Would you say most buyers just personally buy them and just put them in their personal name as an asset, or what's pretty typical, even
Well, it
if they're
depends
renting?
on your budget. We haven't discussed budget yet, but unless you're going for something that I'd say is about 400,000 or 500,000 US and higher, then probably not worth it. Normally, unless you have some huge tax savings in the US that I'm not aware of.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, makes sense.
I mean, because if we assume something conservative, like let's say, I don't know, 5% in rental income on an annual basis, then you want to be earning at least, I don't know, 40, 50,000 bucks for it to be worth paying 2,000, 3,000 bucks in accounting, bookkeeping, and corporate upkeep. So that usually means a property that's closer to 600,000, 700,000. Factor in the fact that you can claim a bit more and the fact that, again, you have your tax savings in the US, then maybe it becomes more feasible at 400,000 or 500,000, but I wouldn't go lower than that. So that's for corporate ownership. So we can assist with renting to long-term or medium-term or short-term tenants. The way we do it, so we're not an agent. We're not a realtor for the purpose of the purchase, and we're not a property manager for the purpose of the management. We're a single point of contact and consultancy and proxy in English, and we do everything for you with third parties. So we would be working with a traditional or bilingual, if we can find one, Japanese real estate agent for the purchase of the purchase for the purpose of the purchase, and then we'll be working with property managers if we can find them, depending on location. If there are property management companies that cater to short-term stays in the area that you'll end up purchasing in, then we'll work with them for the management purposes. And if you're using it as just a holiday home, then we'll be managing it for you, and we'll be working with local cleaners, renovation companies, whatever needs to be done on the ground. So yes, it is possible, but the feasibility would depend on the location, the type of property, if there are property management companies in the area that we can work with, depending on what the local municipality would allow in terms of short-term stays, because there's a national framework, but then each local municipality can further stipulate local bylaws that they would require for the property to comply. So if short-term stay is definitely a must-have criteria, then the due diligence we'll do on properties would look a bit different, as opposed to a case where you're buying a holiday home and then see what we can do it with it post-settlement. But if it's a must-have, then we'll need to dig into local municipality regulations, try to assess whether the property would be feasible for a short-term stay license or not. And if not, what can be done to it to comply? So if it's something like I don't know, fairly cheap renovation, like for example, if they say the communal areas must be in a certain ratio to the guest rooms, then we can move a couple of walls and get it fixed. But if it says you can't be within 200 square meters to a school, there's not much we can do about that, right?
Right, makes sense. And does that, I mean, read up on the municipality deal with, just location, but do you typically know that before purchasing the property, or does that happen after? Meaning, like, are you stuck at a deal and you find out later on you have the intention of doing short-term rentals, but all of a sudden there's some government regulations and no longer you're able to use the property that way, essentially?
If the intention is definitely, again, if short-term stay rentals are a must-have, then we would do that research before we start spending more money on structural inspections. Definitely before the signing the contract and paying the deposit, we'll want to make sure that what you're aiming for is feasible. Otherwise, it's going to be a waste of money from the get-go. Yeah, and researching that will cost a little bit of money, but not as much as it's not going to be thousands of dollars. It's going to be a few hundred dollars to find out, as opposed to a few thousands for an inspection and the non-refundable deposit and so forth. Yeah.
Makes sense. Okay.
So that's something we'll need to look into. So that's something to kind of like discuss between yourself, if it's a must-have or a good to have. If it's a good to have, then we'll find the best holiday home that we can for you, and then post-settlement, we'll see if we can rent it out short term. If not, we might try to rent it out by the month, which falls under normal rentals. So there's no special compliance or licensing required in that case. See what property managers are available in the area. But if it's a must-have, then we'll want to check all of that before we proceed further.
Yeah, that was primarily one of my questions anyway, is what do you typically see in a return if you're going to do long term or short term rentals? Is it, overall you say, hey, you're going to make more money. We're not obviously going to live there full time. It's more of a vacation home for us anyway. And then if you make money on it, it's great. But are you typically seeing more return or better return on long term or short term rentals then?
So that's very location and property profile specific. So if we're talking about right on the slopes or very close to the slopes, which means countryside, cold country, countryside, long-term rentals would not be a real option there. There's not many people who live there throughout the year. I mean, there are people who work at the resorts who live there throughout the year, but they're usually residing on resort during the season, and then they might be renting out something by the month. So maybe, but I don't like your chances. If you're talking about something like Sapporo City, for example, which is a big city in Hokkaido, that's I think about an hour and a bit to Niseko, and then long-term rentals does become an option. And then it also depends on whether it's a house or it's a condo unit or it's a resort villa. That will also limit our options, but also determine profitability. So if you want ballpark figures, I'd say in a big city, so let's say one of the top major seven cities in Japan, so Tokyo, Osaka, Kyoto, Sapporo, Fukuoka, Nagoya, Yokohama, in those cities, we can look at long-term rental returns of something like 5, maybe 6% before tax, if we're lucky. Your income tax in Japan would probably be quite low if you're only owning a single property. So it could be 0 to maybe 5% on every yen after the first $4,000, 2,000, sorry, the rates keep confusing me. Maybe 5% on every yen after the first $2,000, so very low. But if you're buying an expensive property and the rental income gets higher, then it could be up to maybe 10, 15%. So net pre-tax, I'd say 5 or 6% if we're lucky, not counting your individual income tax situation and any unknowns like maintenance, vacancies, that sort of thing. Short term, if it's done in a really good location by a really professional management company, could potentially double that. In the best case scenario, more likely to be maybe 30 to 40% above that. But again, you're running a business. It's seasonal. It's going to fluctuate. There's going to be, macroeconomic and microeconomic factors that would affect your occupancy rates and the rates that you can charge. So that's very hard to assess in advance. There are people who do that, that's their expertise. The people who run the short-term stay management companies will give you all kinds of assessments, but it tends to fluctuate a great deal. So I can't really give you any concrete numbers on that.
Yeah, I just get this ballpark idea of what.
It also depends on when you'll be using the property. I mean, if you're locking it in for half the ski season, obviously that's going to be less, right?
Right. Okay. You have a question?
No, I mean, you're asking
Okay.
big general questions.
Yeah.
Well, we got a few more. I can go through down through your continue going down through your email. So yes, we provide the services for short-term rentals. Depending on location, long-term residential property managers are more traditional Japanese, so there you'd almost always need a middleman like us to just handle them. The short-term rental companies, depending on where they are and what kind of guests they cater to, could potentially be a bit more international facing by nature. It's not necessarily going to say that they're going to be able to cater to foreign landlords directly. It could be that they just have one staff who just caters to guests. But there is an option with short-term rentals that you might not need a middleman. So you could potentially work with a company that does cater to foreign landlords and are able to handle you remotely in English, same as we would have done. But to be honest, a large part of our work is replacing them when they don't do a good job. So I can guarantee you'll always be with the same company. They could be going downhill and you'll have to bring us in to replace them.
Yeah, my whole point is, if we're not physically going to be there, how do you pay the bills? How do you, if a pipe bursts in the middle of the night, what happens if someone's
We
here?
handle all of that, yeah. So when we're done, if you remind me, I've noticed you're on WhatsApp as well. So I'll send you an email with my. Oh, actually, I've got your number. So I'll add you on WhatsApp and I'll send you the management plan selection form, which is what we normally do for people. So there's basically three plans that go up in price and services, basically basic payment of bills and emergency response, or including cleaning and airing once a month, because normally you'd want to. If you're not there at least every other month, mold and humidity are a huge issue here. So you'll want somebody coming in, airing the place out, doing some light vacuuming and wiping. And depending on what you end up purchasing, if you have a backyard or a garden, then there's a third level, which also includes gardening and landscaping and yard maintenance. So those are all options that we can fulfill for you. Yes.
We can assist via a lawyer who will be applying for. We can assist with getting the initial licenses as well.
Okay.
Okay. If again, if we go through the initial research and we find that it's feasible, which is not a given.
Yeah, okay, makes sense. Yeah. Okay.
Now, if you're actively looking at property in Japan, you should check out AkiyaMart. That's AKIYA hyphen Mart, MART, AkiyaMart.com. It's the Zillow of Japan, built for buyers who are actively hunting for a home in Japan and want a much more Western-style web browsing experience than the typical local Japanese websites. Now, we've got an exclusive 30% off promo code for the AkiyaMart Pro annual plan. That's the one that gives you full access to Airbnb zoning maps, hazard maps, sold data, and over 500,000 listings nationwide at any given time. So if you're serious about buying in Japan and you want an easier way to search, this is the best tool that we know of. So you can use my code ZIV, ZIV at checkout and get 30% off your AkiyaMart Pro annual plan at akiyamart.com. So we don't have a property database. Again, we're not realtors. We don't have a particular list of properties that we're interested in selling or anything of that sort. We work with real estate agents based on your criteria and location. We work with local agents or national agents who can service those areas and research based on your requests and criteria. So there's no actual database that we have except the entire market database, which is pretty big. And it includes whatever you want to include. So single family homes or condo units, multifamily properties, those start. So you mentioned your budget will depend on the deal. So if you're, I need to know what you're looking for. If we're looking for a holiday home, then it'll be a different budget. Obviously, if you want a purely investment property like a multifamily building, that'll be a different budget. So what did you have in mind?
More of a question for you. Do you want it more
Well,
purely investment or?
no, and I guess mostly what our goal is that we could potentially have this thing pay for itself after our initial investment. So say our initial investment somewhere under probably right around 50,000, 35,000 to 50,000 range. If we find something that's 5,000, we can put in 40,000 into it, then that'd be great. Or vice versa, if we find something that's already renovated and around that price range. I know that's kind of low for some of the more popular areas, but
Oh, it definitely locks you out of Niseko for a start.
yeah, no, I
So
looked
that's.
at the there. They were like 250 to 500,000.
Yeah. So you're talking $50,000. Is that including purchase costs or just the listing price? Because purchase costs can be about 15% on top of that.
Yeah, so I said someone it's a little bit depending on a little bit of the rental too. It's like if you could expect to get more of the rental, because it is treating like a business.
Well,
Like
and basically, I don't
that's
think
why.
that I quite finished.
But it's not, sorry, I'll have to cut you there. I would not treat this as an investment or a business. You're looking at a holiday home that might be covering its cost, like John was just saying. This is not an investment.
That's
And Japan
exactly.
being Japan, we can't really count on it gaining in value as well. So please don't think about it like an investment. It's an investment in the sense that it saves you on accommodation fees and maybe covers its costs. Yeah.
And that's kind of what we're looking for. I don't want to have to put more money into it after our initial investment, which isn't that's not, I guess, always feasible.
Okay, so we're talking about again, is that including costs or before costs?
That can be before cost.
Okay, so that's about 7.5 million, 7.8 million yen at today's rates. That's going to be a fairly old house, or maybe if we're looking at Sapporo City or Otaru, maybe a 1 bedroom unit plus living, dining, kitchen area if it's a condo. Condos are less of a hassle on the maintenance and unexpected costs, but they would be harder to rent out, potentially maybe monthly rentals, definitely not short-term stays. That's not going to be possible in a condo. But they would be a lot easier on the maintenance. If you want to go for a house, it's going to be fairly old. So I would factor in something like on average 2,000 to 3,000 bucks a year just in structural maintenance, even assuming it doesn't have any major structural issues, which we'll have to conduct a structural inspection before purchase to find out if it does or not. But assuming it doesn't have any major structural issues, then I would say factor in about 2,000 bucks a year just in annual maintenance if it's a house. They're not really built to last in Japan. That's something to keep in mind. So once they hit about 30 years of age, which is where your budget is going to take you, they're going to be deteriorating a bit quicker than what you're used to in other countries. So again, factor in a couple of $1,000 a year in annual maintenance if it's a wooden structure.
And when you're saying deteriorating, you're looking at like the physical structural components, joists, framing,
Correct. Yeah.
exterior sheathing.
Yeah, so obviously it comes and goes. I'm just talking statistical averages, but you'll have 5, 6 years where everything's hunky dory, and then the roof goes for, I don't know, 40,000 to replace it all, or maybe 20,000 if it's just a portion of it. Suddenly the retaining wall around the property needs to be spruced up a little bit. There's leakage or insulation issues or foundation cracks. So on average, we say about $2,000 a year when it hits about 30, 40 years of age. And if it's older than that, it'll escalate.
Okay.
It's no different than owning a house
No,
compared
yeah,
to
I
a
get it.
hall. So,
Yep. Well, except that they're a lot cheaper, so you kind of expect the maintenance to be cheaper too, but it's not.
yeah.
Okay.
So, with that budget in mind and kind of knowing what we're looking at, do you have any suggestions for areas we should look to?
Well, I'd first try to zero in on whether you're open to a condo unit or if you definitely want a house. Again, a condo unit will be easier on the maintenance because you know exactly how much you're paying in building fees. They'll go up slightly over time, but there's not going to be unexpected thousands of dollars expenses suddenly, which you might have with that, would definitely have at some point with a house. But then you're limited to monthly rentals at best, which is not as attractive as short-term rentals and not as many tenants available for that.
And so I guess what I don't understand is the cultural norms for renting. Like in the US, everybody rents. That's a thing.
Standard, yeah.
But in Japan, is it the same? Is that similar?
Long-term rentals are not an issue anywhere in Japan. Everybody does that, but long-term rentals will not enable you to use the property because that's a 2-year rolling lease that is constantly renewed. Medium-term monthly rentals are not the norm here. No, people definitely do that, but it's not the norm. And when we're dealing with condo unit owner unions, we have to. They can't legally prohibit it like they can with short-term stays, but they can definitely make life harder for the property manager and or the guests if they don't like it. So, you know, they come knocking on the door late in the evening asking, "Are you Airbnb-ing this unit? You're not allowed to." Or they don't allow the property manager to hang the key box with the key to the unit outside the building. They just give them a hard time, in which case property managers just won't take it on. So it's
Yeah.
not as common. More challenging with condo units. With a house, nobody can really prohibit it, but it's just a matter of whether we'll, you know, find somebody who can manage it and whether we'll find tenants who are interested in renting it out.
It sounds like it's basically you either have to do a long term, which is, it sounds like it's 2 years, right? That's the typical rental rate is 2 years for a long term tenant.
Yeah, but the tenancy laws in Japan are tenant oriented, meaning that the lease is expected to automatically renew at the same rent amount at the end of the 2 years. If 6 months prior to lease expiry, you're going to notify the tenant that you want them to move out because you're going to be taking ownership of the property, then we haven't ever been taken to court or even, you know, even faced serious opposition from a tenant when we informed them of that. They're Japanese, they're pretty docile by nature, but they do have a bit of a legal leg to stand on if they do complain about it. So we'd normally offer them somewhere between 6 to 10 months of rent as compensation, which is what it costs them to move out and relocate to a new property.
Okay.
Sounds like it might be short term is better.
Well, no, I mean,
Maybe. If you're 20, I'm
it
using
just
it.
depends on the area.
I wouldn't go for long term unless it's a purely investment property and you're not planning to use it for at least a
Well, I
good
guess
4 or 5 years.
in my head and what I would rather see, and I don't know how possible it is depending on what area we're in and how far we want to drive to do what we want to do, but the midterm rental is probably more so what I would be looking at, the month to month, trying to do something like that. So, but we could do
Well,
short
in
term.
that case, if you want to keep that fairly attractive to tenants, I'd maybe aim for the suburbs of Sapporo City or maybe even semi-central Sapporo City if that's a reasonable driving distance for you to get from there to the ski slopes.
I mean, to go
I'll just bring that up on the map for a
yeah.
moment. Give me a sec.
Meaning, like in
Let's see.
Montana, we're still driving an hour or so.
Give me a sec. So from Sapporo to Niseko,
Niseko, it's like 2 hours. So I
Yeah,
don't
about
think
2 hours drive, right?
Urdutsu was like 1 hour and 15 or 1 hour and 30.
Which one, sorry?
I think it's called Rizutsu, or let me make sure I'm pronouncing it even anywhere here,
Rizutsu.
Blue.
Oh, Rusutsu. Rusutsu. Yeah, got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, hour 41 at the moment. Maybe there's a bit of traffic, but it's about 75 Ks.
Yes.
Yeah, and it was
I mean,
more about
I'm sorry, I'm not much of a snowhound myself, so I can't really provide any feedback on ski resorts.
It's just the two we went to. So I'm sure there's a million other ones over there. It's just, the ones we're familiar with. Yeah.
So is that too far for you guys?
It's getting there. That's probably right at our limit. So I mean, if it worked out to do that, then that would be great. Is
Let
finding
me.
a
Have you looked
property.
at Otaru? Otaru, it's not a big city, but I think
Yeah,
it's a
we were
bit
there.
close.
We went there. Yeah, we went there. We
Okay.
were there on our visit. I think
Okay,
Suzy
that's not
knows.
really. Oh, it's a little bit closer, isn't it? Hang on. Just looking what
I
it
did like
is.
that area, and that makes more sense in my mind for something
That's
to
about
do
an hour and a half to Niseko, and Rusutsu is about. Rusutsu, yeah, same. Rusutsu is about hour 45 again.
Yeah. And actually, I mean, that town was on my head. I was actually looking at it on my phone just now.
Yeah.
Is
Well, if
our
you definitely want to rent the property out when you're not using it, though, I think maybe the first step before we even start looking at listings and bothering agents and so forth, we should probably find out if we can find any short-term, as not short-term, sorry, monthly, well, monthly or short-term or both, property managers who can handle that area. I can't tell you that off the top of my head. We'll need a bit of research, which is going to cost a few $100 for us to dig into, but maybe better than starting to spend money on viewings and inspections and whatnot.
Yes, I mean, I agree.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I agree too. Sense.
I'll reach out. I'll see if maybe if I'm lucky, he might get back to me
Have fun.
now,
I'm
but I
terrible too.
doubt
It
it.
makes sense because I mean, how many times are we going to go there a year versus someone that we can, it's slightly bigger of a city in a sense.
Yeah, and it's on the water.
Well, and then you've got the like canal. They build that canal. Someone wants to stay there. Somewhat of a touristy town.
Yes.
I'll reach out to a few contacts and see if anybody can recommend a company without having to charge you for research. But if not, probably factor in about 6 hours of research for us to about 3 hours to get a list of companies, and then we'll pause and ask you if you how you want to proceed. And if you want us to, then we'll contact them with some inquiries, and that'll be the other 3 hours. Hopefully, by the end of it, we'll be able to figure out who and what can do in that area. And
So I
that's
guess
6 hours at, I'll just give you the ballpark figure, 6 hours at 6,600 yen. So that's about 40,000 yen, which is about $300 now, I think.
okay.
And that would be to find somebody or just the research to begin with?
To research, to get a list of companies, and hopefully, if they are available, to get some initial feedback from them and whether they can handle you directly or whether they need somebody like a middleman or whether they're not willing to take it on at all.
Yeah, to make sure I can run it out.
But I
Yeah.
mean, when you do remote viewings in Japan, we'll always need to send somebody with you anyway because the local listing agents are very traditional in most cases, so they're not going to be able to deal with a scary foreigner on their own when you come over there. So a viewing trip like that will cost more than those $200-$300 anyway.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
that's why I'm thinking better find out if we're even like in the right heading in the right direction before we start pouring money into that.
Right. I guess overseas buyers, is it traditional, I guess, to make a trip over there before buying the house, or is everything primarily done virtually?
Vast majority of agents will be able to represent you. Somebody will have to go there, but it's not going to be from overseas. It'll be from, if we're lucky, from Hokkaido, if not worst case, from Tokyo. So somebody will have to go there in person, at least once for the viewings and then potentially once more for signing the contract. A lot of the agents will be able to handle online signings, but some of them are still a bit old school, so there might be potentially a second trip.
Okay.
And so how does that work for you and necessarily your company? Where do these people come from that you're saying that potentially can be found in Sapporo or Tokyo?
So we work in one of three ways. First off, we can just introduce you to some local bilingual foreigner-friendly agents. They'll help you with the purchase and but their job is to make sure everything goes through legally. So they can research some properties, you tell them which one you want to go for, they'll make sure that you can purchase it. They're not going to be strategic in most cases. So the kind of conversation that we just had, like, oh, watch out for that, that might not be feasible. You want to watch out for deteriorating costs or whatever. That's not their job. So we can just introduce you and leave you with them. We don't charge anything for introduction, so you're welcome to it. If you want us to, we can come in as consultants and hold your hand throughout the purchase as you work with that agent, which is at the moment 88,000 yen. That's going to go up to 110,000 in a couple of months. So that's going to be under $1,000 for us to handhold you through a purchase as you work with the agent, and then we'll guide due diligence. We'll review documents before you sign them to make sure there are no surprises or any costly mistakes you're making along the way. Just make sure you're not doing something horribly wrong. And then the other option is we do everything on your behalf. That's a few $1,000. That's based on a percentage of the purchase price. And then you just need to talk to us and we'll receive a legal power of attorney document from you, allowing us to represent you in Japan fully. And then we'll also be handling all of the signings, all of the meetings, talk to the lawyer, talk to the agents. So you'll just need to make bottom line decisions and talk to us. Now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in Webdisk Solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company, Innovatius, is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top-of-the-list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off, on again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com, and his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read, detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today.
And then when you were saying like the acquisition cost, it would be on a $50,000 property, like $15,000. That's separate from the cost that you're talking about now.
Acquisition costs are 15% on higher budgets. If you're talking under 8 million yen, you're almost there. So I'd say, yeah, worst case, about 15% purchase costs, regardless of us. So if you're hiring us for just consulting, that's not going to change the percentage much. But if you're hiring us to do everything on your behalf, then add about 3-4% on top of that.
And that's, yeah, that's what I was trying to double check.
But we do have a minimum of 5% of 10 million yen. So if the property you're purchasing is less than 10 million yen, which is the budget that you are aiming for, is a bit less than that, then it's probably more like 7-8% for our, if you want us to do everything on your behalf. The consulting is just an hourly retainer that's always going to be under a thousand.
No, and most likely just in our scenario, I like to be involved, so I would probably want the handholding thing.
Well, easier for us because that can be just me. I don't need to use any of our Japanese stuff. That's why it's cheaper and we can do that anytime.
Perfect.
Right.
And then I guess I don't think I was clear in my question. So who who is viewing the property and kind of assessing it? How do you find that person? Is that the agent or
So the buyer side agent that I'll put you in touch with will be able to either attend in person or they'll have colleagues in the area that they can send over for that purpose. But please be aware that those viewing trips, again, cost money. That's regardless of what they charge on settlement. They will charge for viewing trips, especially, I mean, if you're buying in Tokyo and they're based in Tokyo, they might not charge. And similar if it's a port of city, but anywhere that they have to travel to, you'll have to pay them for the trips.
And do you have a gut feeling if we find somebody in Sapporo City, what it might cost to go out to something like that? Is that a couple $100 a day or?
A day out would probably around Hokkaido, a day out would probably be around, I'd say, $400, hopefully a bit less than that. If
Okay.
but we'd want to use their time and your money more efficiently, so we'll try to line up four or five viewings.
Yeah,
Right.
exactly.
Makes
Yeah.
sense.
No point in getting them out like $400 per a pop for each and every property, eh?
Yeah,
No, exactly.
my other question too is more about funds, because obviously we have a USD bank account here. Is how are those funds transmitted? Is it because the Japanese bank account, you can't it's almost
You can't open
impossible.
it if you're not resident, not a
Right.
resident. Yeah.
So how does the
So
fund essentially?
for the purchase, you'll be wiring funds directly to the agent, and the agent will distribute it domestically to the seller's agent, the lawyer, the seller, wherever it needs to go. And for ongoing management, we'll need a retainer held here to pay your expenses from, and we'll let you know when it's just about to run out, and then you'll need to top it up.
Right. Okay. So
And
basically,
if there's income involved, then we'll be collecting the income on your behalf, and you tell us when you want it sent back home.
okay. Got it. Got it. Yeah. And is that, well, I guess we can do it in yen. You can do it in yen or USD. I guess it doesn't matter.
I mean, for smaller amounts, I'll send you if once we're connected on WhatsApp, just remind me. I'll send you a referral links to Wise if you don't have an account with them yet. And to OFX, which is a company that handles bigger remittances, because Wise are not super efficient once you get over 20, 30,000.
Yeah.
With those two, I mean, we'll both get some bonuses if you use our referral links. With those two, we usually manage all of the smaller and bigger expenses. So you
Okay.
send in dollars and they pay in yens at the other end, and vice versa.
Yeah, okay. Okay, makes sense. You have any more questions?
No, I think really me and you need to have a talk and see what we're really going to do with this. And this is
I
basically going
would
to.
just as a side note, we're very happy and we do manage short-term and monthly stay properties for clients who really need that. But I would look at potentially just getting a place that you can use because it is a handful to manage these properties remotely, and you'll constantly be dealing with property managers and with in case of a condo with owner unions, in case of a resort property with owner unions for the resort. In case of a standalone house with renovation and repair companies on a regular basis. And if you're renting it out, you also need to keep it in better shape than if you're just, you know, if it's just you using it, you can let some stuff go for a few years.
Yeah.
But you will need to be on the ball. So when you're saying cover costs, you're talking about if it, in case of a condo unit, the average for a studio or one bedroom living dining area apartment kind of thing, you're looking at something like, let's say 15,000 yen a month times 12. You're looking at like $2,000 a year in costs, including your annual property tax, right? D just figure out if that's something that you really need to cover at the cost of the hassle of dealing with rentals or not.
So, and
If
I
it's a
guess that.
house, then maybe that becomes a bigger issue, but definitely for a condo unit, it's not huge.
And I guess that's true. So I'm imagining in what I do here that it's a larger number because I'm getting a mortgage. With that, you're only covering
True, yeah.
maintenance cost, people checking in, and taxes. What does that total number look like? And I guess that's where I didn't even start. I'm just thinking percentage basis instead.
Return, you mean?
No, like what would we be putting in every year if we didn't rent it? if we just had
Two
it for us.
thousand. The average cost of
If
this
it's a
place.
smaller, I'm thinking Sapporo
Without
City.
something.
I'm thinking Sapporo or Otaru condo unit. I haven't checked condo units in Otaru. Usually people buy more houses there, but I'm assuming I'm seeing in the pictures, I'm seeing there are condo units there. So condo units in the city in Japan, if it's a studio or one bedroom apartment and the building is, let's say, between 20 to 30 years old, which is usually the sweet spot where we buy them, I would say about $2,000 a year.
But that you're saying that's in taxes, or that's including
No,
the
that's building fees.
building fees.
Taxes for condo units are pretty low. If you buy them this cheap, it's not going to be more than $200 a year. Worst case, usually less than that.
Okay, so then we'll say 2,200 there, and then if we had somebody going and doing the monthly air out and just kind of looking around type deal.
That's if you do need that. Again, I don't know how often you're going to be at the property, but if you're not there for more than 2, 3 months a year, then yes, you would need that. That would be. I mean, for us to manage the property for you is also going to be about, hang on, you know what, let me just share my screen and I'll show you our
Yeah, because I guess
management.
that's one question we didn't ask. It's really actually super important is what the true cost is. And I don't even know what we're trying to make. I'm just
Give me a
spitballing.
sec. I'll just share my, I'll send you that file later as well, but let me for now just share my screen and we'll
Course.
quickly go through it.
15 hours
a week of work,
Is
I'd make
that
that
worth the time?
5,000 a
Yeah.
year, yeah.
$5,000 is like nothing.
Hang on.
And do I just have it? And
So
it's not
this
that
is
it.
us. We're kind of a concierge type full-on service company. There are cheaper companies out there. There's definitely a company that's cheaper that'll just pay your bills for about 50 or $60 a month. So they'll just, handle your utility bills and the owner union fees and whatnot you can get for 50, $60 a month. With us, it's about 50, $60 a month if it's only payment of bills and insurance and so forth. So similar pricing. If you do need the cleaning, then we go up to about $100 a month. But that's aside from whatever the cleaning company will charge. Okay, so they will charge at least $50 per visit. Potentially, depending on where the property is, potentially more than that.
Say 300
All right.
bucks a year.
So that brings it up to maybe $4,000 a year, I think, worst case.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it's a condo unit, though, we do need to charge you an extra $50 monthly because the owner union require constant correspondence. They're a bit of a pain in the butt.
Huh. Okay.
Take an HOA.
So then we are talking about $5,000 a year.
I'd say less than that. So if we're looking at, let's just run the cost. So your typical condo unit would be, if it's a studio one bedroom, will hopefully not be more than, let's take worst case estimate, 20,000 yen a month. Our monthly fee, if it's a condo, is 8,000. Assuming we also need the cleaning, that's another 14,500. And then the cleaners, let's say, hopefully not more than that, but conservatively, I'd say about 10,000 yen. If they come in every month, but they probably don't need to come in more than once every 2 months, so I'll half that. 47,500 times 12. 5,700. I mean, at current rates, it's actually a lot less than what I thought, but I mean, US dollar could tank and the Japanese yen could soar. Haven't seen that in a
Right.
while, but it could happen. So at the moment, that's about 3,600 a year.
Okay, it's a lot less.
Yeah.
Like 400 bucks a month.
300.
300, yeah, did my math
Yeah.
wrong.
So if that's a cost that you really want to cover, then we can look into monthly rentals if it's a condo unit. If it's a house, the expenses will be higher. So it'll be similar expenses on the monthly end on our end, but then you'll have maintenance and structural strengthening to constantly be thinking about. And potentially yard maintenance, depending on what kind of property you buy.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
I think we've given you enough to think about for now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, but what you were saying before though is with a condo unit, it's probably not going to be possible to do short term.
Short term, definitely not. Monthly, if we're lucky, maybe.
Okay.
So that's better long term. Sounds like better than rot.
But I mean, long term is for an investment property. If you're planning to be using it, long term is not really something you want to get into. The other option is just to buy an investment property and use that money for your accommodation when you come over. There's some
That
people
was
who do that.
exactly what was going through my head at this moment right now. That, and then eventually, if we decide we want to come over there and stay there for longer, we could switch up our game plan.
But long term, just to give you the numbers, if we're buying something for about 50,000 yen, let's call it plus cost. So let's, sorry, 50,000 bucks plus cost, that's 57,500. If we can get about 5% return from it, that's like 2-3,000 bucks a year in income. So that could be, I mean, at least the flight tickets, hopefully. I don't know.
I think you're better off doing short term because the amount you're gonna dump 50 grand and you're only gonna make
But for
2,000
short
bucks.
term, then we're gonna have to have more maintenance costs and more costs all the way around. I guess we'll talk about it with amongst ourselves and then kind of get back with you and we'll see if we need to look for a short-term rental company and kind of go from there. If not, if we don't do the short-term rental, then most likely we will probably just purchase it and hold on to it and try to use it.
Sure. We're happy to assist you either way. Just let us know.
Yeah, best thing to do by WhatsApp because I work with suppliers overseas all the time.
Yep. I'll
Mainly
add you on WhatsApp and send you a little
that's the
emoji
thing.
right now. Yep. So
Perfect.
we'll be connected there and then just remind me if there's any further info you want, that form or the links to sign up with OFX or whatever, just let me know there.
And then I guess I do have a question. So
Sure.
we have a relatively good sized friend group. If our friends were going to go over there and we had it set up for ourselves and they wanted to use it, is that hard to do?
Nope, that's nobody's business. You're not officially renting it out. If they happen to help you with the utility bills, that's between you and them. So that's nobody's business. I mean, they might get a knock on the door from the owner union once in a while to ask who are you and what are you doing here. And we might need to fill in a form to submit to the owner union for safety reasons to let them know when somebody's staying in the unit, what's their name, and how could they can be contacted. But otherwise, it's nobody's business. Nobody can prohibit that.
So, and that was going to be my question. So, if there is our friends, say we had six different people that went over there 1 year, would that draw questions to the owners union, or would they
It would,
potentially?
yeah, it would definitely draw questions, but there's nothing they can do about it. And it's your friends, so they're not too fussed if somebody knocks on the door and say, "Are you renting it Airbnb?" They say no, and it's done, right?
Yeah. Okay. And yeah, especially when every one of them would be American too. Okay. Well, we'll have to see if we would do that.
That's if you can pull that off, that might be the best of both worlds, I would say. Just get a condo unit and just, rent it out to friends when you're not there.
We'll have to see if that works. Because generally, if they're going to
Just
go over there,
don't advertise. Just don't advertise online. Okay, just keep it
exactly. No.
grapevine kind of. Yeah,
Right. Yeah, I get that.
I mean
Okay.
Airbnb and such won't let you list anyway without a license. But I mean, even on your own booking platforms, if somebody the owner union is a bit savvy on English and they find out that you are advertising it for rent, you'd probably get in trouble.
Okay. Let's see that. Let me talk with him and then best thing to, if you can send everything by WhatsApp, just the info, that's probably the easiest way to communicate with us.
Yep, I'll add you on there now, and I will have to jump out to another call in a minute. So thank you for your time, and let me know how you want to proceed. We'll be in touch on WhatsApp.
I guess my last question real quick is
Sure.
to find these apartments, if I wanted to go look for Otaru, I'm gonna go just search online and find them, and then we would start working that way, or what's your
Yeah, you
suggestion
can
there?
send us listings that you find online. Do you know Akiya Mart?
I'm not sure
I've
what
heard
I've
of
been
it.
looking at
I
yet.
have, but yes.
I'll send it to you on WhatsApp now. I'll also give you a discount code. It's worth to get a subscription. I think it's only 15 bucks a month. What they do is they scrape all of the major property portals in Japan and present it in a Zillow-like English interface with map drill downs and filters. It's a really good website to get a subscription
Perfect.
for.
Yeah.
That's where
Is
most
that
of our clients find their listings.
okay? Perfect. So it's better for us to bring you a listing.
Yes, I'm always happy to give you my two cents about them. But as long as you're not an engaged client, there's a limit to how much I'll be able to do. But once we start working together, whether it's consulting or full purchase facilitation, whatever we want to do, then I'm always happy to tell you what I think about them, help you filter, prioritize them, and then when we're locked in on a shortlist, we'll float that to the agent to start making inquiries on.
Perfect. I understand completely. Okay, I got it.
Okay,
All right.
I'm good.
Yep.
All right. Thanks for your time. Talk to you soon.
Sounds
Thank you.
good. Thanks
Bye.
so much.
Bye-bye. So there you have it. Two very different buyers, two very different sets of goals. Hopefully, this brought some value to you, whether you might be on your Japan real estate property journey beginning or the middle of it. And again, watch this space, which means subscribe and follow this podcast or YouTube channel if you'd like to be notified once the Spring Summit's downloads page is ready in a couple of weeks' time. And of course, if you'd like to hear and see more content from us. And once more, thank you all for joining us at the summit. We had an absolute blast. Now, we can't let you go without telling you all about Yen Loans, our latest sponsor. They're a new non-bank lender offering financing to non-residents of Japan for purchases of Tokyo condominiums, soon to be expanding to other major cities as well. So definitely hit them up if you're looking to purchase in Osaka, Fukuoka, Kyoto, or any other big city too. And that's for any purpose, whether it's a holiday home, investment rental, or a combination of both, without any requirement for residency, a Japanese bank account, a Japanese corporate structure, or representative director, any of these things, and with a streamlined application process too. So reach out to them through the link in our show notes and let them know that you found them on the Japan Real Estate Podcast. And if you're quick enough to be one of the first 10 completed applications, you'll receive a 25% discount. That's 50,000 yen off the 200,000 yen application fee. To qualify, apply through the link in our show notes again, or enter the code JREYL on their website, yenloans.com. And that's it from us for this episode, folks. Huge thank you for tuning in. Please do follow and subscribe to the show if this is your first time listening, and we'd love it if you could like and even share this episode with anyone you think might find interest in it. But even more importantly, we love hearing from you. So please let us know what you thought about this episode or the podcast overall in the comments section here on our social media channels. We've got a very active Facebook group and business page, both under the name Japan Real Estate on Facebook. And that's also the name and URL of our YouTube channel if you'd like to follow us there, Japan Real Estate on YouTube as well. And we'd, of course, appreciate your rating or review on Spotify or on the Apple Store or wherever you're tuning in from. Hope to have you with us again. Have a great rest of the day or night ahead. よろしく。